And there it is. There it is. It says 3:30 on my computer. I guess it says 3:30 on his. Here we go. Hey, everybody, it's Kyle Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. It's Monday, 6:30 on yours. You're in the wrong time zone, lady. That was Kimberly Adams. She's going to be here all week today and the rest of the Daily Shows. Also, the big show tomorrow on Tuesday because Molly is off because. So that's where we are. It's a Monday show.
Because it's important to take time off, especially with the world going just absolute crazy.
Oh, man. World is going bananas. And you know what's really interesting, I think, actually, and our two news choices are, I think, the yin and the yang of bananas. Because sometimes there are upsides and you're like, hey, this is good. And then sometimes there are downsides. And you're like, this is bananas, man.
Yeah.
And so having done that setup, I will go first. Larry Kudlow, the director of the National Economic Council at the White House for President Donald J. Trump, said this past Wednesday that he does not believe there is systemic racism in this society. And then on Wednesday, in that same press availability, he was asked about it and given a chance to walk it back. And he said, no, I don't believe there is systemic racism. Kudlow went on CNBC today and was asked again about whether or not he believes there's systemic racism in this economy. And he said, no, I don't believe it. And I don't understand. I don't understand. How can you look
well,
at our
Well, I think it's
and,
worth...
Go ahead, please.
I think it's worth considering, though, what it means if he says there is. Because if he is to acknowledge that there's systemic racism, that means it needs a systemic solution as opposed to an individual solution if it's an individual problem with these quote-unquote bad apples.
Yes. Yes. Good point. Well taken, but still arg. I just, I mean, right? Because it's just, I don't know. So let's get to actually what you and I did in our off hours, as it were, away from this podcast today. You did a web thing with Mary Daly, the president and CEO of the San Francisco Fed. I had on Marketplace Rafael Bostic, the president and CEO of the San Francisco Fed, and in varying degrees with varying language, but explicitly the same purpose, they talked about equality of opportunity. And in Bostic's case, he's a black man trying to figure out economic policy in this country. And he said, you know, I face a lot of the same things that black men face when I go out and about and I step outside the Atlanta Fed. And it's critical, he said, in a really well-turned essay that landed on the Atlanta Fed's website on Friday, which I think we talked about.
It's so good.
It's so good. Really, it's really moving. Anyway, it's really good, and I suggest you read it. FRBAtlanta.org is where you go. But anyway, so he said, look, I step out from the Atlanta Fed, and I'm a black guy in Atlanta, and I see all that stuff. And it's important now that other people are beginning to see what I as a black man see. And I thought that was really interesting. And Daly has her own experiences, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, she grew up poor and talks about not graduating from high school and just needing sort of one person who sort of took her under her wing and helped launch her into the career that she has now. But that the gap is just so insurmountable for some people, for many people, and that this crisis is in many ways making it worse. And it's fascinating because she sort of laid out basically a proposal for what she thinks Congress should do to make sure that the recovery, whenever it comes, it may or may not be coming now, second wave frightening, but you know, investing in things like healthcare and reskilling and digital infrastructure and planning for that new economy. But It is fascinating. You know, you started out with Kudlow talking, listening to him say these systems do not, you know, systemic racism doesn't exist when all of the data shows that it does. It's sort of like climate change, you know? Vast majority of scientists who are like, this is an issue and it's causing major problems and it is going to continue to be a drain on our economy and a risk to people's lives. And then this small subset of people are like, oh, no, it's fine. It's just a little hot outside.
Yeah. The thing that gets me and it hit me when I was reading the Bostic essay, imagine the upside. Imagine the upside if we fix this. And look, the work will be hard and it will take decades, right? but imagine the upside.
Yeah, I did a panel discussion yet again at the press club. I guess it was more than a year ago, but it was with a bunch of LA Times reporters about how they covered the Nipsey Hussle murder. And because they had editors that they didn't have to fight with to prove that the story was important, and because they had people in their newsrooms who were already plugged into the community, they were able to do this amazing coverage that was just so nuanced and so much better than they could have done had they not had to fight for the validity of their experience and their stories. Now, obviously, this is, again, me bringing it super focused to the media, but if you expand that to the arguments we're hearing from economists on Twitter, imagine if Black and brown economists didn't have to for years and years say, no, really, you should be considering race when you're looking at economic policy, how much further we'd be. But the additional hurdle of having to fight those fights makes it that much harder to get realistic and actionable data.
Yeah.
But I took as a little said,
sideways. So yeah. Yeah, I took it sideways. So you go to the upside here. You go to the positive news because it was
the really upside. We've talked on here before about my uncles who live out in Maryland and do woodsy things. And so I called my uncles this morning to talk to them about this Supreme Court decision that said that, you know, if you discriminate against somebody for being gay or transgender in jobs or hiring, that is breaking the law. It's a violation of civil rights law, you know, based on Title VII. And I'm going to get a little bit wonky here just because I'm very fascinated by the turn in this conversation around textualism. And
textualism,
if you pay attention to sort of the narrative around Supreme Court and which justices should get on and how we care about judges and things like that, textualism is this argument that you should basically be looking at the words of the law, what the law says, not what the people who wrote it may have meant, not what really applies in the modern context, not trying to expand it to be more inclusive. Nope, just look at the words. Now, traditionally, textualism has been an argument that has been used primarily by conservatives to say, let's not push this law beyond what it is. That's up to Congress. Leave it alone. In this case, you have a conservative justice writing for the court saying, in this particular case, textualism, because it doesn't specifically leave out LGBTQ folks, it includes them. And it is driving some people nuts.
Well, yeah. So two things. One is the biggest proponent of textualism in the recent memory is Antonin Scalia, right? Mm-hmm. And then the guy who wrote it today, Justice Gorsuch, is getting all kinds of heat in the media, both on Twitter and social media and in actual pieces, for having betrayed Antonin Scalia. And it's a really interesting development. I mean, it's, I just think it's totally fascinating. Totally fascinating. Eisenhower once said about Warren Berger. Go ahead.
Go ahead,
and then I'll get my history geek on. Well, so my history geek goes like this. Eisenhower, a Republican, appointed Earl Warren, to be the Chief Justice. Earl Warren is the guy who got Brown versus Board of Education through the Supreme Court 9-0. And Eisenhower later said, because of that, Earl Warren was the worst decision he ever made. You never know what justices are going to do once they get to the bench.
Mm-hmm. And it will also be very fascinating to see what this means for the recent Trump administration executive order saying that you could deny health care to people who are transgender. Mm-hmm. And so this ruling could have a lot of repercussions.
Yeah, there are lawsuits coming. There are lawsuits coming. All right, so let us turn to the happy place. I will say peremptorily, if I could use my legal jargon, I have nothing today. I couldn't find anything that cheered me up. It was kind of a tough day for me for a lot of reasons, but that's a wonderful day. So you make a smile, Ms. Adams, and then we will all be on our way. How about that?
Well, I have to be honest. This Supreme Court decision made me smile, and it made my uncle smile. Yeah. So that was it made a lot of people smile. You know, which gets into this whole debate over where we land as a country on what is just sort of taking a side versus what is just sort of the arc of human history. My smile is about how coronavirus is changing fashion trends. And so this was a story in the Washington Post, because I live in Washington, D.C., you know, support local journalism, even though it's a national paper. But it's talking about how as people are staying at home, you know, more people are buying like Crocs and slippers and sweatpants and comfy, cozy clothes. Yep. But when they do go out, women and other people who like to wear makeup are buying a lot more fake eyelashes and eye makeup and skincare products. Yes, fake eyelashes are apparently selling gangbusters.
I will never, look, don't at me, but I will never understand fake eyelashes. Truly. The idea, I mean,
you
look, I wear contact lenses, so I poke things in
them,
my
Kai.
Well, that's true. But look, I poke things in my eye every day, but the idea of gluing something to your eyelids?
Of them have magnets.
Oh, stop it.
No, seriously. Some fake eyelashes you put on like with magnets. Like there's like a underneath magnet and then above magnet. I don't know. I have to ask my sister about this. She's way more knowledgeable about fake eyelashes than me.
Report back.
It reminds me when I lived in Egypt, how I tell you the most top-ranked makeup fashion women I knew were all of the veiled women. Because what was happening is many of them, they covered their hair for religious purposes, but they amped up their makeup game to like 100, no joke. And so crazy elaborate eye makeup and just fashion queens, which goes to show you, if you take away some of the sort of obvious things that your eye might jump to, it really does bring out people's creativity when it comes to the other things that you can do to sort of make yourself stand out. And in this Washington Post article, they talk about people working on their smize, which is their eye, your smiling eyes, smize.
Oh, wow. I know I'm coming off like a Neanderthal right now, but whatever. I'm learning. Look, you learn something every day on this podcast. That's all I'm saying.
All trying to get smarter.
There you go. All right, we are gonna leave it there before I get myself in more trouble. We are back tomorrow with the big show, the Tuesday show. It's gonna be it's a super good conversation. It's gonna be about Black Lives Matter and gay pride. The intersection of them right now. There is a lot of cross currents, a lot of things to talk about, and a lot of things to really try to digest in a very, very dynamic kind of environment. It's going to be super interesting. Lots more to talk about, obviously, on Wednesday with your questions. So get them to us. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Questions in the subject line. And we will go. That's what we'll do. Yes, we will go.
Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. And our senior producer is Jody Becker. Ben Heathcote is our video producer. And Ethan Peretz is our video intern. And thanks to writer-producer Erica Phillips, who tells me that we had an interesting discussion about Gone with the Wind in Slack today, which I can tell you about later.
We should talk. Well, look, tomorrow we'll have all kinds of extra time, right? All kinds of extra time. Daniel Ramirez was in charge today, pushing the buttons down in LA. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. Yeah, I haven't seen Gone with the Wind in a very long time.
You know, it's an interesting historical piece, especially in the modern context, but like with a whole canister of salt.
Right. No, exactly. Right. It's got to be contextualized front and back as you watch it, for sure.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.